This is Olive, and I'm 11 years old, and I live in Southside.
This is Cooper, and I'm 4 years old.
This is Elena. I'm 13 years old and live in Spickley.
This is Julian. I'm 14 years old and live in Highland Park. And this is the Kittsburg Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us for the Kittsburg Podcast. We're excited to share with you a fascinating interview, plus details on a remarkable museum you might never have visited, and honest answers to questions we've asked teens from the Pittsburgh area. I'm Kittsburg's director, Yuling Chang, and I'm here with my Kittsburg colleagues who are also parents just like me.
That's right. I'm Melissa Rayworth, the editor at Kittsburg.org, and I'm a parent of two boys. I'm excited for this episode where we talk with MacArthur Genius Award winner, artist, and Manchester Craftsman's Guild founder, Bill Strickland.
And I'm Christine Sorensen, a Kittsburg producer and also anchor at KDKA-TV and a parent of three kids. Let's dive right into this episode. We kick off every episode with a Pittsburgh gem, a really special place in southwestern Pennsylvania that may not typically be on the list of famous spots. Today we hear about contemporary craft. Yuling, I know you spent some time there with your kids.
I love this place. It's in Lawrenceville, which is such a cool neighborhood, just fun to explore. But I think of this place as part museum and part makerspace. So there's beautiful art that you can see. They talk about making art accessible through craft. So you can see ceramics, fiber, glass, metal, and wood. And they have QR codes that you can do and explore with your kids and learn about things. But then you can also make. So you can go and take workshops on block printing, paper making, metal stamping. The kids and I have made bracelets doing metal stamping. They have community days throughout the year where you can go in for free. And if you really want to do more, you can take workshops and get certified in rabbit laser cutting. You can learn how to do geometric bead weaving, or you can even become one of the teen apprentices.
I love this place. My mom is a sculptor, so I have a special place in my heart for it, but I love going there every time. It's so fascinating to see what they have, and to know that they can do so much with kids is really cool, too.
Yeah, I could imagine for kids and adults to be able to be in a museum and be seeing the work of really accomplished, talented artists, and then, like you said, Yuling, right then and there, do some making of your own. It sort of really ties that together, and I would think for kids and grown-ups, that's really inspiring.
And I just love during community days that the kids can try something new and it's low cost to the family. You just try it. And then if they want to do more, then go find a workshop. But otherwise, you've tried something and you can see if something else might interest your child. You can see more about the contemporary craft mentioned in stories and event guides at kittsburg.org or visit us at kittsburg.org/podcast.
Pittsburgh is Kittsburgh. You're listening to the Kittsburg Podcast.
Bill Strickland is a visionary, coming from a tough neighborhood of Pittsburgh to becoming an artist and starting schools in Pittsburgh, Manchester Craftsman's Guild and Bidwell Training Center, where people learn vocational skills and art. And they also have all kinds of art classes for young people. He was awarded the MacArthur Genius Award for Leadership and Ingenuity in the Arts. And he's expanded the model for these educational environments with sites in 13 places around the world. And I'm so thrilled and honored to have my friend Bill Strickland here today. Thank you.
Nice to be with you, Christine, as always. We've had a great relationship, and I'm adding another chapter to that ongoing conversation.
Well, let's talk about how you started in ceramics, because that's actually how you and I met. Tell us how that really changed your world.
Well, I'm a student of clay, and I was a student at Oliver High School in the Pittsburgh Public Schools. And Mr. Ross, who was the art teacher, happened to be a ceramic artist. And I was kind of passing by the art room, and he made a great big old ceramic bowl, and I was transfixed by that image. And I stood there and I said, "What is that?" He said, "Oh, it's ceramics." I said, "Would you be willing to teach me?" He said, "Yeah, just get your homeroom teacher to sign a piece of paper. It says you've come here and you're good to go." So for the remaining 2 years of high school, I did a sabbatical of my own creation in the ceramics program. And Mr. Ross says, "You're one of the smartest kids I've ever met. I'm going to make sure that you go to college, not to jail." And so the way to do that is I'm going to hound you until you fill out an application to some college, because I'm leaving this high school to teach at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, and I want to know that your life is going to be safe. So he hounded me relentlessly. With some reluctance, I filled out an application at University of Pittsburgh, got in on academic probation because I flunked the scholastic aptitude test, which back then was multiple choice. I just kind of marked the thing up. But they had just started an affirmative action program at Pitt, and I was one of the five kids that got in. And so I went from academic probation to 4 years later graduating cum laude and becoming an emeritus trustee of the university. And I got an award of a PhD from the University of Pittsburgh, along with 26 other honorary PhDs. The point of the story is the arts and Mr. Ross believed in me long before I believed in myself. I remember Mr. Ross took us to Carnegie Museum, and they happened to have an exhibit of Impressionist artists. And one of them was Renoir. And I said to Mr. Ross, "I see like that." And he said, "What did you say?" I said, "That work makes sense to me. That's how I see life." He said, "Do you have any idea who Renoir was?" Well, I found out pretty quick. And he said, "That's a gift, and you've got it. And we're going to build on that." And so Mr. Ross, along with my mother, who trained me to disregard the color of my teacher's skin and to concentrate on what was inside their chest, meaning their heart.
There's no doubt Mr. Ross had a huge impact on your life, as did your mother. For the parents who listen to this podcast, how important would you say teachers and adult role models like parents are in helping kids try new things and discover what they're good at?
It's essential, because kids are born into the world as sponges. They're capable of taking in a lot of things, much more so than you might think. And although they may not have the words to communicate what they're experiencing, those experiences are there. And probably for the rest of their life, by the time they're 5 years old, their views on the world have already been set. They just need to learn how to put words to what they've already felt. And that's basically, as an adult, what happened to me. The reason I got into jazz, because Mr. Rush used to bring in jazz albums. And I got fascinated with the music, and a very famous trumpet player named Dizzy Gillespie showed up at our place many years later, and he walked in and said, "You're a heck of a jazz musician." I said, "I don't play any music." He said, "Oh, yes, you do. This school is your song." Anybody that could think about clay and photography and chemistry in the same conversation, that's how jazz musicians think. And so that night, five men from around the world came together in our music hall, nothing written down, 30-minute practice, standing ovation. And I said to Mr. Gillespie, "How is that possible?" He said, "It's a language." He said, "Son, how did you build this center?" I said, "I don't know. I visualized it." He said, "Well, that's what we do. We developed a pattern of communication, and apparently you have been recognized as a visionary, because that's what visionaries do. They see things long before other people see them."
Wow. And so Mr. Ross, he didn't require you to learn about jazz. He just loved jazz right in front of you. And I guess that's very Fred Rogers, you know, just enjoy and revel in something in front of somebody and they'll enjoy it. Would you suggest parents really bring kids into the different kinds of the arts that they love and not stop themselves and think, "Oh, well, this isn't for little kids, so I won't play them this music or show them this kind of art"?
Well, the quick version of that story is we took a program of jazz to Beckley, West Virginia. A bunch of poor kids from Beckley who couldn't even spell jazz. And 300 kids showed up. The next time we went back to Beckley, their parents were there, because the kids were so excited about whatever it was they heard, they told their parents about it.
Wow.
And now we've made that into a program that we're going to annualize in Beckley, West Virginia. So forget jazz. Think about feelings. What the kids were able to connect with was how they felt. And I thought that may be a key that is worth concentrating on.
Well, and that really ties in with your centers and believing how the environment really is important for the learning. So explain how you've created your centers, what they're doing, and how the environment is a big part of that.
Well, environment drives behavior. Beautiful environments create beautiful kids, and prisons create prisoners. So I figured out if kids are depressed and they're hungry, give them something to eat. But in our center, we have gourmet food, not brown bag food. And the pastries are world class. And so the students get used to feeling a different way. It's also good nutrition. So I've made the connection pretty quick that good feelings and food are connected to each other. So you add jazz to the chemical mix, and then you get photography in the middle of the mix, and you bring in a little science, and all of a sudden, you're living in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, because that was what he was all about. I was on one of the first shows in the neighborhood with a guy named Johnny Costa, who was a piano player. So Johnny did piano, and I made pots, and we created this duo. And we were in the first group, along with a fellow named Yo-Yo Ma. In another life, I used to fly airplanes for a living. And one of my buddies called me up, Fred Driggs, and said, "Bill, I just saw you on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, man. What is that?" I said, "Whoever told you that an airline pilot couldn't make pots?" And that became legendary in Braniff Airlines. So I have my 1 minute of fame with Fred Driggs and Mr. Rogers.
Oh, wow, that's just incredible.
And how have you seen Manchester Craftsman's Guild and Bidwell Training change the lives of young people from their time there?
Well, I've got three PhDs that came out of the place. We literally have created probably one of the young men who's going to become iconic in this generation. His name is Sharif Bey, who was in the New York Times a month ago with his work. This kid grew up in Bellsouver in the Pittsburgh public school system. Kid wouldn't even look in the eye. And yet he went to Slippery Rock University on a full scholarship. Oh, he won the Fulbright.
Oh, wow.
And went to Europe to study contemporary ceramics, got his PhD, and is now associate professor of ceramics at Syracuse University. And he introduced me at a speaking engagement in Chicago. And he went out and said, "I want to tell you a quick story about Mr. Strickland." One, he mentored me at Manchester Craftsman's Guild in Pittsburgh. I'm now Dr. Sharif Bey, and it gives me great honor to thank the man who opened my eyes to the world that he saw that I now see that way too.
That must feel pretty good to know that you've had that impact on people.
Oh, yeah.
So what advice would you have for kids who are still looking for what their passion is? I mean, it's amazing that in high school you discovered something that just spoke to you and you knew that ceramics were for you. You fell in love with jazz. What would you say to kids who are still trying to figure out what their thing is?
Keep thinking and keep feeling. I'd actually suggest you ought to do more feeling than thinking. It's the relationship between the arts and good food or sunlight. It's a chemistry that you feel. And when you're born, as I was once upon a time, there are certain basic things that you need. One is affection, the other is encouragement, and being in an environment that says that you are special. To young people, I'm saying, find people that you admire and get to know them and make it a profession. And you know what will happen? They're going to admire you. And it's that exchange that will provide you with an opportunity to look at the world with a different set of eyes.
Wow. And I think that's comforting for parents, because if they're busy worrying, oh my gosh, I haven't got my kids signed up for the right classes or I haven't put them in the right place, a lot of what's inspiring about what you're saying is that really, if they can just encourage the kids and know them, and neighbors can do that, and aunts and uncles and all the caring adults around kids can just really get to know the kids and pay attention to them and share whatever it is they love, they're doing the right thing. They don't have to know about some magical class to sign their kid up for.
How about singing? Everybody can sing. It may not be good, but you can sing. You know, do your version of Happy Birthday, man. I mean, that's the stuff that everybody can do. Yeah. You don't need a choir. You don't need any rehearsal. And I think that those gestures, those customary gestures, are what kids need to develop to build their lexicon, their vocabulary of how to feel about others. Because if their mom and their dad are singing Happy Birthday to them and their siblings, it's very likely that they're going to do the same thing with their friends. And it just begins a process of a chemical reaction. And so you build a world that's based on joy, not discouragement, but happiness.
And I love how you're growing this all over the country and cities all over the U.S., as well as Ireland and Israel. Do you see some sort of universal themes when you're teaching young people in different parts of the world?
Yes, they're all built the same. They all want the same thing. When they're hungry in Israel as sure they are in Pakistan or Haiti. And so what I figured out is if you build beautiful environments and you treat everybody as if they are an asset, not a liability, after a while they begin to believe it. And I said, okay, now that I got you hooked, the requirement is that you keep on this trail. And just in case you change your mind, I'm coming back to remind you of what you committed yourself to. You committed yourself to having a life. And I'm going to be judging whether or not you maintain fidelity to what you said you wanted. And so far, it's working out pretty well in Israel and Puerto Rico. And now we're going to Belfast, Ireland with the same story, same formula. And I can tell you, the children are exactly the same. In Israel, we have the Jewish kids and the Palestinian kids going to school together in Israel,
wow,
in spite of all the political turmoil. And so when I went to Ireland, I said, I've got the Jewish kids and the Arab kids talking to you. What's your excuse? At least you claim to be worshiping the same God. So come on, let's leave the guns at the door, in some cases literally, and let's go toward a life that makes sense, that is germ-free and harm-free. And I guarantee you with my life that I will be celebrating your lives and their trajectory together.
I love how you just never stop. I mean, you just keep going. What's next for you?
Well, I'm going to create something called the Strickland Global Leadership Institute, and Luis Vidal, who is I've hired, is going to build our center in Belfast because he visited Pittsburgh. As it turned out, I wasn't there. I was somewhere else. He left a manuscript for me, and he said, someday I hope to be able to meet you. Well, it turns out, through a common connection, I did talk to Mr. Vidal and his firm, and he said, I'm a world-class architect. I did the passenger entrance in Heathrow Airport. I'm now building Pittsburgh, and I know about you. And I want you and I to develop a friendship and talking points because I intend to change the planet, and I heard that's what you want to do. So why don't we become friends, which we have reaffirmed, by the way, in the last 2 weeks I talked to him. And it's game on.
Wow. So tell us about the Institute. So what are you most excited about and what all will be happening?
Well, basically, it's just an expansion of what we're already doing here in Pittsburgh. But what I've discovered is people are people. And if you start with things that are known, people need love, they need affection, they need encouragement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't care if it's Israel or Belfast or Puerto Rico, the message is the same and the needs are the same. That's what I figured out. That's why I won something called a MacArthur Genius Award, because I figured out the cure for cancer of the human spirit, its environment. And that's what Vidal figured out. So here's this world-class guy and Bill Strickland, this inner-city guy from Pittsburgh, who now are partnering to see if they can impact their philosophies on the rest of the planet. Now, it's unlikely I'm going to change the planet, but what is likely is that I'll never give up.
Well, and what's also likely is that the impact you've had on so many students just ripples out, and they have that impact on other people. And I think that is what changes the world.
Yeah, you've definitely changed the planet in some respect, Bill. So we'll give you that credit. It's been such a joy to have you here. Thank you so much for being part of our Kids Work podcast.
Absolutely.
I was really struck by Bill's story and how he had great mentors in his life, starting with Mr. Ross, who just said, like, let me show you this and let's dive into this. Let's listen to some jazz. Let's look at ceramics. You can do anything you want to do. And that kids are sponges and you just soak up those experiences and you follow your own path.
Yeah, when he said, Mr. Ross believed in me long before I believed in myself, that really brings home that all adults, whether you're a parent or a grandparent or a teacher, if you let a child know you believe in them, even if you have no idea what it is they're going to want to do when they get older, just let them know you believe in them. That is just so powerful.
And for our listeners who can't see Bill Strickland, I've known him for so many years, and I've loved following what he does because he never stops. He's 77, and he is still creating new things because he loves to give, and it's just so inspiring.
Yeah, and the fact that he's taken something that he built here in Pittsburgh that was so Pittsburgh, you know, so connected to Fred Rogers and connected to the community here, and now he's made it something global. That is just fantastic.
And you can find a link to Manchester Craftsman's Guild at kidsburg.org/podcast. And in a moment, we're going to hear local teenagers share their real thoughts on why arts and music programs are important in school.
You're listening to the Kidsburg Podcast.
Pittsburgh is Kidsburg.
Many kids spend time these days in science, math, and technology classes. But at some high schools, arts and music classes are only offered as electives that kids have to try to squeeze into their busy schedules. We asked kids at SLB Radio's Youth Media Center what they think about why arts and music programs are important to a school. Here's what they said.
I think art music, the reason why it's so important in schools is because it's a way of introducing kids that might have never done that before into something they might enjoy or something they want to explore or find a life within that. But also it can work as hobbies for other kids.
For art, I would say that's important because you get to like just draw, have a good time, like let your other stuff go while you're in that class. Just have a calming time. And for music, it's really calming to just be able to like sit there and sing with your music teacher or like with the rest of the class.
For me, art and music is important because it's fun. Sometimes it's hard and the teachers can be a little hard on you, but it's okay because it's still fun and it's good for focusing and memorizing things because you have to remember songs and lines.
Just having a like science, math, academic kind of environment is like really restricting because I feel like a lot of it is grade focused and you're focused on reaching like a certain goal. But the good thing about art and music, like you can't really quantify anything. Like you can't really set a goal and be like, oh, that's where I want to be. So I definitely feel like having arts and music is able to allow not only our minds to grow, but also give us some relief from the pressure of academics.
My name is Jose.
This is Sophia.
This is Megan.
From the Youth Media Center at SLB Radio, this is Penelope.
This episode has me wanting to go create some art, and we have got plenty more inspiration and ideas coming in the next Kidsburg podcast episode.
Yeah, we've got 6 great podcast episodes this fall, and if you missed any of them, you can go back and listen to the 6 that dropped last spring as well.
Just go to kidsburg.org/podcast to find them all and be sure to sign up for our free weekly Kidsburg newsletter to find news stories and online guides that can help you raise the kids you love in the Pittsburgh region and beyond.
This is Rocco. I'm in 7th grade and homeschooled, and this is the Kidsburg Podcast.
On the next Kidsburg Podcast, we talk with writer Ryan Roseski about the ways that Mr. Rogers is still helping parents today and how his insight can help you raise the kids you love. Plus, we take you to the Seesaw Center, and we spill the tea with teens, getting their honest take on how parents can help kids do better in school.
Until then, we hope you'll visit kidsburg.org to learn about the resources and advice from local experts that can help all kids have the best opportunity to thrive.